those tray tables up and locked. It's Snescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
I'm Emmy Zero.
And this is the second and final episode of for August 1991 of the Super Nintendo library, taking a look back at those games. These are some games.
These are some games, yeah.
We might see some things shift around from where they are on the list right now.
We might. That is possible. I don't know what you came away from these games thinking about them. I definitely had some thoughts that I think are possibly a little different than the ones I had the first time. I'm excited to talk about these. Once again, three games today that are really reasonable, pretty consequential games. We have just straight up first party Nintendo game. We have Nintendo adapting a beloved PC game, and we have the first attempt at a scrolling shooter on the Super Nintendo, adaptation of a very popular arcade game. So yeah, Pilot Wings, SimCity, Gradius 3, that's what we're talking about. That's a wide spectrum of genres right there.
It really is. It really is. I know I want to end with SimCity because I have a deep dive that is pertinent to SimCity today.
Of course.
So yeah. I kind of feel like starting with the game that I am most likely to say is in the wrong spot on our ranked, is in the wrong tier right now. And I kind of want to see if you agree with me on this.
Okay.
I was thinking we might start with Gradius 3.
I think we should, yes.
Okay. All right. So, Gradius 3, this one comes to us from Konami, of course. This is a Konami joint. Yeah.
Yeah.
A horizontally scrolling shooter, an arcade classic. This is the one where you get the options, which probably the most notable thing about it, where you get little clone ships that follow you around and shoot when you shoot. It is nifty.
It is. It also has kind of a gear shift thing going on with how you acquire power-ups that is a bit novel, a bit specific to Gradius as a series. I like that in principle. Basically, you have a bar of like five different power-ups along the bottom of the screen. Each time you collect a power-up token, it just sort of moves you one notch along that bar, and then you can cash that token in on whatever is currently lit up on the bar to get that power-up. And that can be the aforementioned option, various other kinds of weapon fire and speed boosts and shields. So yeah, that's what this game's got going on.
Yep. Yeah. Really cool enemy designs. Especially the bosses look really, really neat. Mm-hmm. I think this game plays just fine. I really, like you said, I really think the concept of how the power-up system works is very novel and very cool.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I think it is ranked too high because playing this again, wow, does the slowdown really kill this one?
It really does. When we had not played a bunch of other games on the Super Nintendo, it was easier to give the slowdown a pass, but guys, this game runs so badly, so badly. It really messes with the flow of the game. Just the feel of playing this game is pretty important to it because you need to do precise movement. You need to be able to get around fairly complex environmental obstacles. And it is harder to do that because it runs so badly. And yeah, it is not consistent. It just, slowdown comes in and out, and you can really feel that even if this game has pretty decent graphics, and they're not in the grand scheme of things incredible graphics, but the art design is nice. Everything is reasonably, you know, complex and very colorful. God, the way it plays is so rough. And yeah, I think it really does hurt this game in a material way.
Yeah, I mean, I really do like the visuals of this game.
Me too. I don't want to undersell those, yeah.
Yeah, I really liked the way that the bubbles looked in that second level, but once you see them, everything starts slowing down. I mean, you know why, because like you hit them and they split apart, so you've got all these different things on screen happening. So I get it, but wow, they really needed to clean that up, and they didn't do it. I'm wanting to say I think there are like fan-made patches for this game that fix a lot of that slowdown.
I think that's right, yeah. I think if you specifically want to play the Super Nintendo version of this game with less slowdown, there absolutely are ways to do that these days.
Yeah, but we are not rating these games based on what they could be or what they are with fan-made patches. We are ranking them based on what they were out of the box, on the cartridge. And this game is, you know, performance-wise, it is a mess.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I don't really have a ton to say about this game other than, you know, I like the music. I like the look of the graphics. I like conceptually the way it plays, but not in practice because of the technical problems. Did you have anything else to really say about Gradius 3 before we talk about its placement on the tier list?
No, I think we can wrap this one up pretty quickly. We've praised a lot of things about this game, but that slowdown is just too much to ignore. Also, I mean, like, this is a problem with a lot of shooters of this vintage, but the death spiral that you find yourself in after you lose a life, like, they really needed to figure out a better way of handling that.
I think it's pretty regrettable that this is a game that does restart you from a checkpoint when you die. Instead of just restarting you where you die. The death spiral where you can be built up to having a pretty, you know, OP sort of ship and then lose all of it and have to start back from a, you know, sometimes less than ideal place. It's rough. It's not fun. I don't enjoy that as a mechanic in this game. I do want to mention one fun thing, though. I looked at the manual for this. I'm looking at the manuals for all of these. And the manual for this is, like, it's kind of fun because it's written in kind of like a, you know, talking directly to the kids, you know, sort of style, where it calls the enemy stronghold the, like, the bad vibes zone.
Oh, I missed that. That's,
yeah.
Wow, that's so good. That could have been written today. That's wild.
It could have been written today, yeah.
The vortex of bad vibes. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, all right. Exactly. So I like that. And I also like that inexplicably, the bosses are referred to as the mayors of their various areas in this manual. You know, when the big orb with the big orb of goo with a bug inside it is done fighting you, it's gonna go back to its office and try to balance the budget for the hell zone that it's the mayor of for the next year, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. See what civic infrastructure projects can be done with the tax money they're getting in.
Well, you know, foreshadowing a game we're going to talk about later, I hope it knows how to balance its residential, commercial, and industrial zones well.
Indeed, indeed.
That is pretty funny. Okay, so you know what, folks? We're just going to rebrand again. This is just going to be ranking of manuals now.
It's just a manual. Yeah, this show is about the manuals now. Sorry if you wanted something different from it. But that's, you know, it is what it is.
Oh, that's really great. I'm glad you caught that. I missed a lot of that stuff. That's wonderful. That is so good. It really forces me to reflect on the weirdness of this game, like the, you know, flying through sand dunes in space with weird sand snakes in them, just giant bubbles, you know, like you're always in space. You're not on a planet, or at least doesn't seem like you are.
You are in space. You approach some sort of big thing that the level takes place inside, and then you're back out in space. So yeah, I don't know why there are sand dunes or volcanoes or any of that stuff out in space, but there are, and that's just the way it is.
Also, one of the turrets is called a cankerzor. Yeah. And the bestiary here, bestiary, is that how you pronounce that? I don't actually know.
I think they're both fine.
Where it just shows you all the enemies here. It's called the Enemy Hall of Blame.
Yep, it sure is.
They went for it here, folks. Uh-huh. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Also, there's a little slime creature, it looks like, called Yang.
Just Yang, yeah.
I wonder if it's going to suggest to the mayor that they should institute a universal basic income.
Oh, good question. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so right now this game is in the B tier. And if this game
got to go down,
yeah, I mean, if there was no slowdown in this game, I would say, yep, that is perfect. That's where it belongs. It's a pretty good one of these, but yeah, that slowdown really kills it. Do you think that this knocks it down to C, or do you think it even knocks it all the way down to D?
I don't know. The big thing is that I did not actually have very much fun playing this game because of the slowdown. And I have had fun playing quite a number of shoot 'em ups on this system. So my impulse is that probably C is like where I would put it, but maybe it is a D. Maybe it is a D because there's the slowdown gets in the way of it so much.
Yeah, I think I still had enough fun with this that I'm okay with it being in C, but I like by the skin of its teeth.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So it's a C game, but only just barely.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that's reasonable.
Yep. If we ever break these out into plus and minus categories as well, which we might do someday. I talk about it enough. This would be a C minus probably. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's Gradius 3 all wrapped up for us. Our first shift in the list from where we initially placed it.
Yes, so. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. So next up, we've got Pilot Wings.
Yeah, Pilot Wings.
So this is a Nintendo game published and developed by Nintendo. I talked last time about how F-Zero maybe felt a little bit more like a tech demo than a full fleshed out game. Mm-hmm. I think that goes double for this game, maybe. I don't know.
I agree. I think you're right. This is an interesting game. This is a flying game, not a shooter, not an action game, really, but almost like a light kind of airplane handling sim. Not just airplanes. There's actually a few different vehicles here. Once again, just like F-Zero, the whole point of this is to show off that Mode 7 mm-hmm. and show what you can do with the pseudo 3D that's possible here. This is a game that I think both of us had quite a bit of trouble getting into the first time we played this. I'm curious to know, is that still true for you, or did you find anything else in this that you did not see the first time?
Well, first of all, my opinions of this game are tainted by its predecessor, Pilot Wing 64. I'm sorry, what? Predecessor? What are you talking about, past me? I obviously meant successor here. N64 came after the Super Nintendo. Oh, for crying out loud. Pilot Wings is not a game that I played when the Super Nintendo was out, when I had one. But yeah, Pilot Wings 64 same. Is. And I had a lot of fun with Pilot Wings 64. And
I did too.
As a result, it's hard for me to go back to this game and not have it sort of feel overshadowed. Like I wish that it were framed more like Pilot Wing 64. I wish that the missions followed the flow of Pilot Wing 64.
It feels a little clunky. It feels kind of clunky the way it's designed. Like, it doesn't feel like they quite had the overall framework of the game down that well with this one.
Yeah, like, I don't like the way that hitting retry means that you've lost all of the progress of all of the events for that particular level that you're at, and you have to start them all over. I thought the first time that that meant I was just going to retry that one event. But once you've done an event, you're kind of locked in with that score unless you want to redo everything.
That's annoying. Yeah, I got tripped up by that too, and I didn't like it. Yeah, I also was a big fan of Pilot Wings 64, and I was even a big fan of Pilot Wings Resort, the 3DS launch title. I think that Nintendo, with a little bit more refinement, was able to get something really good out of this series. But yeah, like the actual gameplay, the actual flying a plane or a rocket belt or what have you around is pretty good in this. And it's a little finicky, and it's pretty easy to screw up and not be able to recover. But once you kind of figure out what you're doing, it honestly is pretty fun to play. It's just everything around it that isn't up to snuff, I think.
Yeah, I think what I found with this game is that this version of Pilot Wings, more than the N64 version, kind of demands that you handle it very delicately.
Yeah, very delicately, for sure. Like, don't touch the controls until you're ready to intentionally move your vehicle in a direction.
Right. Like, even the fact that you don't accelerate by holding down a button, you accelerate by tapping a button, and then that increases your speed a certain amount, and then hitting hitting the brake will decrease it a certain amount. Like, you don't hold like gas and brake like you would on a regular vehicle, which feels a little counterintuitive to me. But once I figured out that was what the game wanted me to do, I was having a much better time with it.
Yeah, I agree. And once again, this is a game where the manual, I'll talk about the manual a little bit early with this one.
Yeah, please do.
The manual for this one, I honestly thought was a little bit dry. Like, it's well written, it's clear, and it's got some decent, art and layouts in it. But it is not as characterful as a lot of the other manuals I read for this pair of episodes. I will say, though, it was pretty valuable to read that before playing the game to kind of get my head around what this game was going to expect from me. And, I'm glad I did that. But I think that definitely the first time we played this game, back when we were originally starting this show up, I had a lot of trouble with that level of kind of delicacy that the game is asking from you, because I didn't understand that's what it was going to need. I think that I think it is good. I think it is well put together in terms of what they're asking you to do, but I wish that the game itself communicated that a little more clearly.
Yeah. There's also the problem that, because I can't really help but compare this to Pilot Wings 64, that the world of Pilot Wings 64 is so much more three-dimensional, everything. There's so much going on there. I really liked all the locations in Pilot Wings 64. Everything just feels so empty here in Pilot Wings that I don't know. It's hard to imagine me really digging into this game the way I dug into Pilot Wings 64 back
in the day. I think that's fair. And I mean, basically, we haven't really described the way this game is set up. Essentially, this game is a set of skill challenges, basically, where you are given a total number of points that you have to you have to earn in order to move on to the next level, basically. And within the level that you're on, there are several different events where you use different kinds of vehicles to accomplish different actions. So the second level is a thing where you have a light plane event where you have to fly through some rings and land. You have to use a parachute to fall through some rings on your way down and land on a landing zone, and a rocket belt where you have to maneuver through several different rings and land in a specific place too. And these all play very differently, and you have to you were scored on individual parts, individual aspects of that. So like your accuracy and the time it took you and what condition you landed in, how much fuel you had left, all of that stuff. And the total points for all of those things get added up to see whether you get to move on to the next one. And there's a little bit of character here in the form of the flight trainers. There's four of them that, you know, are each a different person that will give you sort of your sort of missions and either praise you or tell you you did a bad job after it's over. I got a perfect score on my first rocket belt thing, and it made the flight instructor's eyes turn into little tiny dots when she was like, I didn't expect you to do that good.
Yeah,
so that was fun. Yeah,
that particular instructor, her compliments feel very backhanded. Like, I aced it the first time. I didn't get a perfect score. But she said something like, well, I guess I know better than to judge by appearances. I was like, wait, what are you saying about
me? That's mean. What are you doing? Yeah. Yeah. So I like that there's a little bit of personality to it that way. But, yeah, it's pretty bare bones. And yeah, like I just, I do find the structure pretty frustrating in its way.
Yeah. I wish that it operated more like Pilot Wing 64 in the sense of, like, you know, you do really well in an event that unlocks a higher difficulty in that same event. And then like, if you unlock, or if you do well in all of the, you know, like all of the easy missions for all of the default vehicles, then you get like one of the secret things, like the human cannonball or the weird jumping boots. Pilot Wing 64 had some real weird events that were pretty cool, actually.
It was that's a neat game. I like that game a lot.
But you know, I did end up having a little bit more fun with this game than I was expecting this time around.
Mm-hmm. Same.
You know, once you kind of get a feel for what this game is really expecting you to do, you know, it is kind of fun. You find ways to sort of like tweak your score a little bit. Again, it's annoying that you can't just go and redo an event without resetting your score in all of the events in a certain round. Because, you know, like if you do really badly in an event, you could just sort of like let that go in the hopes that you'll do better in the next one. But like if you do badly in two events in a row, you're probably not going to, you know, get a high enough score to move on. And at that point you got to just kind of scrap everything. I wish that it were easier to practice that one event over and over again without having to undo all of my progress.
Yeah, definitely. I really would like that too. To give it a little more praise, one thing that I think is very clear after having played several additional years worth of Super Nintendo games is that no one ever really made anything else quite like this for the Super Nintendo. Like, no one ever really quite tried to use Mode 7 in this exact way again. And, you know, maybe that's because this game did everything you can do with that concept. But also, I think that this is a pretty challenging thing to pull off. So the fact that it does it kind of well is actually pretty impressive.
And also this game does have a few surprises tucked away. Like later on, you unlock a helicopter, and then I think the last mission, you have to use that helicopter to save the instructors who have just suddenly been kidnapped. Suddenly this game has an antagonist.
Yeah, suddenly at the very end, it's a big swerve, definitely, which is pretty funny.
I can appreciate that.
This has really funky music, and I like it. It, like, the rocket belt music in particular is a real weird tune.
Yeah, it's got kind of like the little, like, almost vocalization samples in there.
Yeah.
They're very, very strange, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds a little bit like KK Slider is singing to you.
It kind of does, yeah. Well, right now this game is in the C tier. I think if anything, it maybe goes one tier higher, but I don't know. I'm a little torn on it. What do you think?
I kind of agree. Like, it does have real problems that we have talked about, but I think that, like, the parts of it that work genuinely really work. And I think it's just such a distinctive, interesting game. And I mean, look, like, yeah, okay, Pilot Wings 64 is obviously a way better game, but it was building on the basic concept that's here, and what's here actually does really work, even with those issues. So, yeah, I think that, you know, maybe it's a low B game. Maybe it's you know, kind of on the cusp of B and C, but I think I would actually move this up to B tier.
All right, well, then we'll do it. Congratulations, Pilot Wings. You've just moved up in the world, much like many of your vehicles. You've ascended.
Yes, that's right. Also, at the end of the episode, I will reveal the fun little Easter egg that I kind of realized when I was reading the manual for this one. So,
ooh, okay.
Stay tuned for that. It's not mind-blowing or anything, but I think it's a neat little thing. So, yeah.
Well, all right, then. We will be looking forward to that. And we'll also be looking forward to our final game for today. It's SimCity. And what a great opening tune SimCity has on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, yeah, the music all around in this version is really awesome. And yeah, that opening tune is just, it's the best. It's great.
So SimCity, this was made by a studio called Maxis. And this version of SimCity was published by Nintendo. There have been many, many, many versions of SimCity that have been published by many, many different companies over the years. That's going to kind of get into the deep dive. So this one's a little bit weird. I started out just kind of wanting to do a brief history of the company Maxis, which was created to publish this game, basically. And I kind of found out some interesting stuff about early Sim games. I found an article from 2015 in Ars Technica by Richard Moss called "From SimCity to, well, SimCity, the History of City Building Games," kind of assuming that, like, okay, SimCity is going to be the beginning and ending of this article. But no, we go way further back than SimCity. So I kind of wanted to talk about a few early Sim games before we get into SimCity proper and talk a little bit about Maxis. So, yeah, that's going to be today's deep dive.
All right, let's do it.
Like I said, I was kind of inspired by this article by Richard Moss. Given the title and my own knowledge of the topic, I just assumed, hey, SimCity, that's going to be where this genre pretty much starts, right? But no, I thought like an idiot, because the first game mentioned was called The Summer Game, which was originally programmed on the Digital Equipment Corporation PDP-8 mini computer all the way back in 1968. You know, when it comes to video game history, I tend to think in terms of, like, it starting with the first commercially sold video game, which was 1971's Computer Space. But, the history of games actually goes back further than that, even if they weren't, you know, like, games in nice boxes on store shelves or in arcades or anything like that. This thing dates back to when computers were rooms still. So, because this game was originally made for this mini computer, this puts it in Moby Games' sort of nebulous mainframe platform category. According to Moby Games, it was originally programmed by Doug Diamond in a language called Focal, which is a programming language I've never heard of before.
Nor I.
It was later ported to BASIC by David H. All to run on personal computers as those started becoming things in the 70s and 80s. He also changed the name of the game to Hammurabi, which he took one of the M's out of the name Hammurabi to skirt Basic's character limit. In this text-based game, the player takes on the role of historical figure Hammurabi, who is tasked with making decisions regarding things like economics and agriculture to help the ancient city of Sumeria thrive. Decisions are made by answering questions, usually with a number or a simple yes or no. Do a good job, and your people flourish. Do a bad job, and your people may starve or even revolt against you. The Summer Games / Hammurabi inspired a lot of similar games, mostly using similar mechanics. On that formula, according to Moss's article anyway, was a game by George Blank called Santa Paravia. This 1978 release bridged the gap between Hammurabi and SimCity by giving the player control over public works, taxes, and also offered some graphical elements. While the player still made decisions in a text-based, turn-based manner, the end of each turn would display a map, giving the player a visual representation of the consequences of their choices. Finally, in 1982, players were treated to a fully graphical and real-time version of the City Sim with Don Daglow's Utopia. These were all important games, to be sure, but none of them had the same popularity as SimCity did, or were quite as fully featured. So that brings us to 1984 with the release of Raid on Bungling Bay, which is where the SimCity story actually begins. Really? Again past me? I don't know why I said Raid on Bungling Bay. It's quite obviously Raid on Bungling Bay. I'm probably going to keep mispronouncing it throughout this. Sorry about that. Will Wright's masterpiece was kind of accidental. Wright had been developing Bungling Bay while working at Broderbund, and the game involved the player controlling a helicopter to attack enemy bases and factories while trying to protect an aircraft carrier, which was the player's source of ammo and repairs. In a November 1995 issue of Next Generation magazine, Wright is quoted as saying, "I had developed this editor to make islands and found that I was having a lot more fun creating the islands than playing the games themselves." Bungling Bay would release in 1984 for the Commodore 64, with MXS and NES ports to follow a year later. Wright would go on to make more editors in this vein, which would lead him to creating SimCity. Unfortunately, the idea of a city planning game was a tough sell, and finding a publisher was proving difficult. So Wright teamed up with Jeff Braun to form Maxis in 1987 to publish the game themselves. They released SimCity in 1989 for Amiga, Mac, and the Commodore 64. It's around this time that Wright's old employer, Broderbund, expressed interest in publishing the game on more platforms for them. SimCity would end up being published on over a dozen platforms, including the Super Nintendo version, which Nintendo published themselves. Nintendo had also planned an NES version, which never came out, but a ROM of that game was later dumped onto the internet for all to see what could have been. Maxis would go on to release other Sim titles like Sim Ant, Sim Earth, etc., and later a sequel to SimCity with the futuristic SimCity 2000. They'd also end up spinning off a subsidiary to make Sim product for the private sector, like Sim Refinery for Chevron.
Woof. Yikes, I didn't know about that. Yeah. That's a bummer.
Yeah,
Will Wright is kind of a weird libertarian guy, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if Sim Refinery is like out there. I'm wanting to say that a lot of those kinds of games that they made for the private sector would end up getting kind of trashed after that subsidiary of the company folded. But it's possible that like there might be ROMs or copies of those games flying around out there. I don't know.
Huh. Fascinating.
In 1997, Maxis would be acquired by EA, and in a 2015 article for Kotaku, Luke Plunkett eulogizes the closure of Maxis. He writes, "EA's purchase of Maxis marked a shift in the studio's focus and fortunes. Co-founder Jeff Braun took his EA buyout money and left. Nearly half the company's original employees were laid off by Electronic Arts, and Maxis' attention over the next decade would converge on three things: SimCity, The Sims, and an experimental god game called Spore."
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. SimCity's further sequels would never quite match the success of its predecessors, and Spore was, well, kind of a disaster.
It was Spore, yeah.
Yeah. I remember working at GameStop when that game came out, and folks that we tried to get to pre-order that game that were not happy when they got it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, The Sims and its seemingly endless expansions were a success. The Sims actually was the kind of game that Wright had wanted to make for a long time. And I've commented before that Sim Ant felt like a precursor to The Sims as a game that focused on managing individuals over managing systems. So it doesn't surprise me at all that mm-hmm. he maybe wanted to make a game like that as early as the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Wright stayed with the studio all the way until 2009. He left then, and then in 2013, a SimCity reboot came out, which was a DRM-laden and broken mess. So it actually wasn't too surprising when EA shuttered Maxis 2 years later. I say they shuttered, but really they just shuttered the main office where Maxis kind of was known to have gotten its start. The Maxis name still exists within EA, is pretty much just a name. But, you know, The Sims and Maxis still survive as brands within EA to this day. But what Maxis was is pretty much no longer.
That's sad.
So, yeah, that is the story of some early Sim games, text-based Sim games and Maxis. And now we can talk about SimCity.
Yeah.
What is your history with SimCity overall? I'm kind of curious.
I don't have much of one, really. I played a little bit of Sim Earth on the Super Nintendo when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I played Sim Ant on the Macintosh extensively. But as we kind of discussed when we talked about Sim Ant for the Super Nintendo, that's a really different game. Almost more of like a proto real-time strategy game in some ways than the same kind of thing that is going on here. And from time to time, I have played other kind of management games. Like I played, Bullfrog's Theme Park and, you know, some of the later versions of SimCity a little bit. Honestly, a lot of my experience with SimCity is secondhand because this is the exact type of game that my partner is a huge fan of. This is like her bread and butter. Is SimCity and its and the Sims and their derivatives. Okay. So I know a fair bit about, like, I had ringside seats for Spore and the SimCity 2013 disaster because she was really excited for both of those and ended up being supremely disappointed by them because they were both very exciting prospects beforehand and then extremely disappointing in practice. So, you know, I in general like this kind of game conceptually, but I've never been good at just kind of sitting with a simulation for a long time and watching it grow. So, you know, it's never quite been my kind of game, even though I respect them for what they are. And I like them when they are a little bit on the simpler side, like this game that we're talking about today.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you there. I have a little bit of experience with these games secondhand as well. I had a couple of friends who really liked these games and like had original flavor SimCity on like a, you know, an old black and white Macintosh. Mm-hmm. And so I would just watch them play it. I never played it myself because it always just looked way too complicated for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I did enjoy watching them play it and, like, you know, seeing how all these things kind of work together. And the original SimCity on computers had a lot of weird quirks to it that I thought were visually interesting and mm-hmm. kind of neat. Playing this game now on the Super Nintendo, I kind of wish I had made more of an effort to get into these kinds of games because I kind of get it. Like, this is a really sort of chill game. I really enjoyed my time with this, actually.
Yeah, same, frankly.
It kind of makes me want to fire up like an old Mac emulator and try and get into this, like the old games again. Mm-hmm. Cause yeah, just like setting everything up and then watching everything grow and kind of seeing you know, okay, if I do this, what is the effect going to be? Oh, okay. Well, that didn't work. So let's try this instead. Population's right. growing now. So let's do more of this. Yeah. It's really chill. It's really, it's just kind of fun to sit back and experiment, try things out. I think I finally get it. I get why this was so popular.
No, 100%. I get why this was so popular. I had a really good time playing this. Like, despite what I said before about how, like, this has never really been my kind of game, I had just a wonderful time all the time I was playing this. And, like, I think they've done an excellent job on this. And I think that this game, published by Nintendo, I think the Super Nintendo port was also developed by Nintendo, if I'm correct.
I think there's definitely a lot of Nintendo specific nuances to this version of the game. So, yeah, I think a lot of this was kind of developed in house.
And I mean, I think especially if you compare this like interface wise to what we would get later in Sim Earth, especially, which Sim Earth's a weird abstract game anyway, maybe too abstract, but there is just such a kind of clicky, like toy-like fun to the way this game, the way you interact with this game, that I just really enjoyed it, and it feels very well suited to the Super Nintendo. And yeah, it's really fun to just set up a town, set up all the different, you know, zoned areas for, you know, commercial, residential, and industrial, set up your power plants and your services, and just sort of watch it all go and develop. It's really relaxing. It's really fun. The music and graphics are great. It's a really neat version of this, and I liked it a whole lot.
You know, I've seen videos about other Sim games, and again, you know, it makes me kind of wish that I had dug more into this back in the day, and it does make me kind of want to go back and check out some other Sim games. I want to say, like, I think it was like LGR on YouTube had a thing about Sim Tower, which was actually not truly a Maxis game. They just published that one. Mm-hmm. That was developed by the Seaman guy.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yes.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. Yut Saito, is that his name?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, he developed Sim Tower, but you know, Maxis just published it and, you know, put the Sim name on it to kind of give it that brand cohesion. Mm-hmm. But that looks like a weird fun thing too. Like just the idea of just you just set all this weird stuff up and then let the game do its thing and then, you know, make little decisions along the way. It's almost the same sort of passive experience that I get from like some of those old screensavers where you had options to like how you wanted to mess with things. So you would do that and then you would see like what the effect would be. Although, you know, I feel like this is a much more like directly involved experience. So, you know, it's a lot different too, but
yeah, definitely.
Getting back to this particular version of SimCity, I really thought I was going to be disappointed with the lack of mouse support here. But really, it wasn't that
it
big
works,
a deal.
It works, though. Yeah. It works really well, honestly, with the as it is designed for the controller. You have, you know, you have a set of big buttons on the left side of the screen for different things in sort of the basic sort of view of your town mode for different kinds of things you can put down on the map. You have various buttons across the top that will take you into other submenus for things like, you know, looking at the budget for your town and allocating resources and checking on statistics for how people think you're doing. And another thing that this game has that I think is a really smart move is a little guy that just pops up to explain stuff to you, like an actually charming and not annoying version of Clippy. A little doctor character named Dr. Wright, obviously named after Will Wright. He walks you through the very good practice mode this game has. And you can check with him to see how you're doing at various points in the game. So I think that really helps in making this a really approachable version of this. I think that it all just works. Like, it works very well for what it is, and this feels like aside from Mario World, easily the most fully featured game that came out with the Super Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, if there's anything I would ding this game for, and you know, and I don't know if this is a bigger problem with the SimCity franchise or the original SimCity game across other platforms as well, but like, I know that there are very specific things you can do to sort of min-max your time with the game, you know, like to, you know, expand your population really, really quickly. And the fact that like the limitations of what this simulation is sort of, you know, run up against, this is a very mechanical video game.
Right.
Or it can be a little bit disappointing, but also like, you know, you don't necessarily have to min-max. You can still do things your own way and find your own way to increase that population and get that fancy Mario statue. But it's a video game, so there has to be, like, to some extent, there has to be, like, a condition you're kind of striving toward. The fact that it is a simulation and not just like an outright sandbox. So, you know, like, for instance, if I want to create a walkable utopia, well, that's not something I can actually make within this game. Although I can make a lot of trains, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that's good.
I can say no roads, only trains. I don't know, like the game mechanics in the, hey, this is a simulation, and it's the fact that it can't just be a sandbox. You know, like, I would like if there was also like a sandbox mode where I could just do whatever.
And yeah.
You know, like,
well, just, and a lot of games, a lot of city building games and games like this afterwards did include a sandbox mode. That's a pretty standard major feature of this genre. It just isn't here in this one.
Yeah. Like, I really like SimCity. I like what it's doing. I like trying to play SimCity, but sometimes I wish it could also be Animal Crossing, you know?
Legit, yeah. I feel that. I do.
But you know, it's not really fair to judge SimCity for not being Animal Crossing. That's, you know.
Right, yeah. They're different things. Yeah. And, yeah. No, like, I think that for what this is, I mean, you know, you've got your practice mode. You've got your kind of primary mode, I guess I would say, where you're just trying to develop a city and develop it to kind of, you know, the highest level it can be. And you've also got scenarios where you have a pre-built city with certain things going on in it that you are and a goal that you're trying to reach. So, like, between those things, there's a lot of options here for, like, ways you can play with the toy they've built. But I do agree that a sandbox mode would be nice, but I just think that, yeah, I agree. This game's kind of doing a different thing with what it's got.
Yeah. The only other criticism I might have against this game like when comparing it to other versions of SimCity that I remember watching my friends play, is like, as much as I like the music in this game, I wish you could turn it off and just hear, like, the little, you know, the little weird, quirky sound effects that other versions of SimCity would throw at you. Like, I'll never forget, right, like, the little MIDI helicopter noise with the "we are reporting heavy traffic" sort of bark that the game would throw at you every now and then.
Yeah, that's cool. That's definitely not something that this game allows for. And that is kind of a shame. I agree. And frankly, also for an open-ended sort of simulation type game, just being able to turn off the music is a good thing in general.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it just kind of gave you that option, but and maybe it does. Maybe I just didn't dig around in the options enough. But the music that is there is quite good though. So. Oh, did you want to talk about the manual really quick?
I would love to talk about the manual. The manual is the other big thing I wanted to talk about here. So the manual for this game is far and away the best one that – it might be honestly the best manual for a Super Nintendo game that I have found. It is 45 pages long, and effectively what it is an eloquently written full-on strategy guide for how to play this game. It is all written in the voice of Dr. Wright. It starts in a very clever way with walking you through the Tokyo scenario for this game, which is literally just, here's an already built city, summon big Kaiju Bowser to destroy it. And what's great is that this walkthrough that's on the first few pages of the manual gives you really good explanations for how a bunch of the basic features of this game's interface work. It shows you that stuff like the Bowser thing or other natural disasters that you can call down to kind of wipe out your city are an option, you know, just kind of jangling the shiny thing in front of your face if you're not already fully bought in on the simulation part. And it's written in a way where Dr. Wright is continually just utterly disappointed that you want to do this. That he is just so sad that you're destroying a city instead of building one. And after that's done, he's like, well, now that that's done, maybe you'd like to know about how to build a city instead of destroy it. And then it goes into the actual process for playing this game from the early beginnings of just putting down buildings all the way up through, you know, having like a fully functional, you know, highest technological level, highest population level version of the city. And there are there's good art in this. There's, really kind of engagingly written text, and it's all laid out really well. This feels exactly like the best of Nintendo Power, basically, in terms of like a feature about a game. I would honestly put money down on this having been just made by the people who were making Nintendo Power and who were making those strategy guides for games that Nintendo Power was publishing. This just feels like one of those. And it's so cool that this came with the game.
Yeah, it's really neat. I like the art in it, too, like the way that on the bottom you see like a little village in the first couple pages. But then like as they start telling you how you build the city more and more, like that drawing becomes of a bigger and bigger city. It's got a hell of a lot of charm. Like this whole SimCity package is just taking a really solid concept from Maxis and Nintendo, just kind of Nintendo-fying it up in just the right way without removing what makes SimCity SimCity. It's just kind of a perfect collaboration in a way. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and I don't really have anything else to say about it, but I just, I would encourage anybody who's like, especially if you're a fan of SimCity, even if you don't have a great intention to like play this version of the game, go read that manual because it's a really neat document. Yeah. It's a really cool thing just all on its own. So, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about with regards to the game?
Nope, I think that's going to do it. And SimCity is in the A tier already, and I think that, yeah, that's where it belongs.
Yeah, it stays. It's one of the best on the system. I don't think anybody's really managed to do a simulation-type game better than this on the Super Nintendo at the point where we're at in 93. So
yeah, definitely.
So, just an absolute winner all around.
All right, and with that, I think that's going to do it. That's going to wrap up August of 1991 again.
So before we go, I do want to talk about my Easter egg that I found.
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
This occurred to me because I was the order I played these games in, was I played some F-Zero and some Gradius 3 just to start with. And then I went and I played some Pilot Wings and SimCity, and I kind of left Mario World to like the very end because I was so familiar with it. But during all of this, I was also looking at the manuals. And what this meant is that I was looking at the manual for Pilot Wings after I had read the F-Zero manual. And it struck me as very funny that the characters the flight instructors in F-Zero appear to have the same color scheme going on for them as the four racers in F-Zero. There's the blue one, the yellow one, the green one, and the blue one. And I was like, well, that's interesting. It's kind of a funny thing. And then I realized what this is. This game, Pilot Wings and F-Zero, and also Mario World, contain the blue, yellow, green red motif because those were the colors on the Japanese Super Famicom's buttons.
Right, and that was the early logo too, was those the four primary colors. Yeah.
So that's like their little signature in all of the games they developed for the launch of the system, is they all incorporate the logo colors for the system into the games themselves.
Huh. Well, that is interesting.
Like I said, it's almost nothing. It's a tiny little thing, but I think it's neat. I think it's cool. It's a little bit of a shame we missed out on that here in America because we had the purple buttons on everything.
Yes. Yeah.
I wouldn't change those purple buttons for the world because I love the design of the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think just think it's neat that they had this little thing baked into the games to let you know what you're playing them on. So that ultimately will do it for us here.
Yeah. So next time, I think we're going to jump back into the chronology where we left off. And I believe that is the December 1993 issue of Nintendo Power.
That's right. That's what we're going to be doing next time. So please look forward to that, folks. We hope you've enjoyed this detour into the further past. And I think this has been a lot of fun. I think this has been really neat to do. I'm also excited, though, to keep moving forward. So next time, we'll see you for that Nintendo Power episode. Until then, I'm Emmy Zero.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.